Joining us today is David Horgan, the chairman of Clontarf Energy. Hello, David. How are you? Welcome to Stockbox.
Well, thank you.
It's good to be talking to you. This is the first time we're speaking. Of course, there has been some news released today from your Sassenov gas project in Western Australia. But before we get into this news, I wonder if you can give us a quick overview of the Sassenov prospect, its location, estimates, and notable drilling successes in the area.
Yes. North West Shelf in Australia is in many ways the perfect location for gas discoveries because it's very extensively served by 47 million tons of liquefied natural gas capacity, which traditionally has gone to the Japanese market, especially after Fukushima, at reasonably high prices. And now Asia is 70% of world demand for LNG, and Australia, together with Qatar, are the major suppliers. The problem is that the surge in demand into the Asian market has been about 6% in the last 10 years and into China 8%. And nobody was really anticipating that, particularly in the downturn and then the COVID correction. So basically, people have been too slow to explore for gas. I mean, they have been developing their LNG trains, and there's five major projects in this part of Australia. But people have been under-exploring for the last 10 years in gas, and as a result, are gas-hungry now. And we jumped on the opportunity because after the oil price fall at the end of 2014, many of the independents and super majors pulled out of their non-essential properties. Now, one of those very good companies was a company called Hess, and they pulled out of about half their international operations, such as Ireland, Iraqi Kurdistan, parts of South America, and Australia, even though they'd spent $1.5 billion in this part of Australia and had some discoveries. And the basic idea was that they'd been part of the huge Guyana discovery with Exxon, and Exxon was cash calling them. So they simply had to manage for cash at a difficult time for the industry. But that difficulty was our opportunity. And through our partner, Western Gas, we were able to acquire on favorable terms access to this prospect. It's a very large prospect. It's about 400 square kilometers, and it's in reasonably deep water, like 1,000 meters of water, but relatively shallow rock, about 2.5 kilometers of rock. And the appeal is that the geology of this part of Australia is very well understood because there's a series of discoveries all around us. Discovered fields to the south, to the northwest, to the north, to the east. And that's what's fueling the current LNG boom in Australia. So we know that there's a source rock. So we know that gas is in the system. And we know that because down dip of us, i.e. if you go down further into the earth, there's a discovery by Hess at Mentorc. And that discovery was full to the spill point. So it's producing now. So we know that gas that went into Mentorc filled it and went somewhere else afterwards. And if you look at the seismic, there seems to be a very clear migration path from Mentorc up dip through the Sassenov structure. And we know that it didn't get very far to the northwest because Chevron drilled a couple of wells further to the northwest over the last decades, and they were not full of gas in the excellent reservoirs, the key reservoirs. They had gas in the lower reservoirs, which were not targeted in this well. So therefore, we have this mystery. There's lots of gas below us at Mentorc. There doesn't seem to be gas above us at the obvious migration path. And our theory is that the gas has been trapped in this huge stratigraphic structure. So what we're doing is we're trying to kill several birds with one stone. We're drilling a very clearly defined structure, which is a four-way structure of good size in the middle of a very large stratigraphic trap. Now, what that would say is if this well is successful, and it was independently estimated by ERCE to be a 1 in 3 chance of success, very similar to what our own geologists had estimated, if it's a success, we expect that this well would probe up about 2.6 trillion cubic feet. Now, that's trillion with a T, that's 12 zeros. That's a lot of gas. But the P50, or most probable median, if it's a discovery, would be over 7 trillion cubic feet. So you're talking about a major structure. And in addition, there is, it would appear, communication between the large seismically supported apparent gas full structure. There's communication between that and an extension of that structure further to the west. Now, it's not very broad communication, maybe tens of meters. But if that communication is working, which appears to be the case from the seismic analysis, that would enable us to have a total structure size potentially of up to 17 trillion cubic feet. Now, you're talking there about some of the biggest gas structures anywhere in the world. And indeed, this year, IHC, in its review of drilling, identified this well as one of its 30 most high-impact wells worldwide. And that includes, you know, North America, the Persian Gulf, South America and Asia, and so on. So the fact that it's got IHC's attention as one of the top high-impact wells this year shows both endorsement for the structure size, potentially, and also for the reasonably high probability of success. Always remembering, of course, that it's exploration and many things can go wrong. But at least here, the shareholders have a real chance of a major uplift if we're successful.
Okay, so just taking a look then at the news today, it looks like you are getting to that more exciting part of exploration for the company with the mobilization news. Can you give us a bit of an overview of the mobilization activities and what the next steps are in the coming weeks?
Yes, one of the good things about the downturn is that rigs were available fairly idle. Like if you go back 18 months, there was only one deep water rig working in all of Africa, for example. I mean, there had been 12 or 13 just 3 years previously. So we were able to get the second biggest rig, the Valerus 2 rig in Australia. And we were able to get it on a very low rig rate, just $130,000 a day as a basic rig rate. I mean, now you'd probably be paying about $360 a day. Now, it took a bit of balls to commit to the expenditure. And that rig is, it's worked in the area for years. The crew is a very experienced crew. And we're delighted to have that rig. It's in the outer harbor now of the nearest bay. And that's undergoing final safety checks. There's a final emergency repair to a section of the chain. And we expect that will begin towing sometime on Thursday. And that's a magical point in time because that's the point at which we start paying the daily rate. Up to then, we're not paying anything. And we would expect that the anchors will all be cleared by today and by tomorrow, Thursday, that will be towing. It takes about 4 days to get to site. There should be about 3 days laying anchors and securing everything. And then we expect to be drilling into the rock the first week of June. And in the pay zone between the first and second week of June. It's not particularly deep. It's deep water, relatively deep water, over 1,000 meters of water. But the seas are relatively calm for those of your investors who are used to the North Atlantic, which is not to say that it never has cyclones. But the rock depth itself is quite reasonable. It's only about 2.5 kilometers of rock, of which about 2 kilometers is relatively soft clays. And only about 500 rocks are more hard or problematic rocks, which is what you need for a good top seal.
Okay. So this is an exploration well. Could it be disappointing?
There's a 2 out of 3 chance that it won't be a commercial discovery. You know, so.
Okay.
But if you look at the worldwide average for wildcats, it's about, at best, 1 in 8 of making some sort of discovery. So there's two things that separate Sasunov from the average. First of all, the hit rate is clearly much higher. Now, we had estimated about 35% chance of success. And I was delighted when ERCE, which is a highly respected and fairly skeptical operation, did its completely independent review. It came out at 32%. You know, so it's effectively endorsing what our people had said. And our own geologists, very experienced in the Northwest Shelf, came up with a vindication of those numbers. So we're fairly confident, it's not a certainty, but we're fairly confident this is a low-risk exploration well. All exploration is risky. This is a relatively low-risk well. But what's different is, normally when people talk about geological success, they're including the possibility that it might be a relatively small success, like maybe 100 million barrels or maybe 100 billion cubic meters, something like that. But here, the expected, you know, minimum reasonable scale, if it is a commercial success, would be about 2.6 TCF on this well. And that's a very big discovery, you know, for a wildcat. So it's an unusual wildcat in the sense that it has a big potential upside, a relatively low risk, and immediate customers. I mean, normally what goes wrong with exploration companies is they either have dry wells, which is bad, or they have a discovery, which is nearly as bad, because then they have to dilute and go through the valley of pain, getting permitting and all the rest of it. What's different here is that we've got a series of LNG facilities in the area and pipelines hungry for the gas. So what I and our partners would be keen to do is, assuming we can get a price, we would be keen to monetize it for cash as soon as possible.
Okay. So hopefully it is successful, like you say. What measures have you taken to minimize any risk of failure, but also to move on from it, if you know what I mean? If it doesn't turn out to be commercially viable, does the company have a plan to move on? No doubt it'll be disappointing for everyone, but you know, you pick up and you go to the next thing.
Yeah, well, what we did is, first of all, we funded it from Australian investors. Mm-hmm. So we deliberately didn't go near the London investors. No one who funded this particular well will be out of pocket. Obviously, they could buy whatever price they want to buy. Sure. Our longstanding hard-bitten shareholders shouldn't be too sore about that. But as part of the deal with our partner, Western Gas, we are looking at other plays in the acreage that they took from Hess. So I think that there will be other possible plays mm-hmm. In the area. And the reason why we're keen on Western Australia is because it's probably the last jurisdiction in the world that would ever turn against mining. The likelihood of Western Australia turning against oil and gas is pretty remote in our lifetimes. So there is potential. The combination of government support, reasonable fiscal terms, well-understood geology, existing liquefied natural gas facilities, and the hungry Asian gas market. In addition, we've got our acreage in Ghana, which we were slow to move to full ratification, because ratification triggers the clock in Ghana, and we have a work program that's reasonably demanding, which involves a commitment on spudding a well within 3 years. We were waiting until there were signs of life in the farmout market. And while the farmout market is not yet really hot, I think you'll see it over the coming months. You'll see that the very high commodity prices will feed through, first of all, to the farmout market and the valuations of major producers. And then finally, it'll feed into the share price of explorers. At the moment, explorers are basically being priced on a dry hole basis. But it's a business cycle. We've seen it many times. What happens is explorers tend to run at the end of the cycle rather than the beginning. They may not run for many years, but they will have their day in the sun. In addition, as part of our activity in Bolivia for many years, that we were very active in the lithium industry for many years, working very well with the Bolivian authorities. We hit a bump in the road when the economic downturn happened and there was a left-wing government elected in 2006. And we effectively, reluctantly, had to pull out of Bolivia in 2012. But we were called back by the new lithium company in 2018. And since then, we've been finalizing joint venture arrangements to work with the Bolivian government. Because as they say themselves, you know, the politicians would like to have total control. That's what the World Bank economists tell them. But unfortunately, it's a very specialized industry. You need expertise to get access to market, to explore, to develop, to process the lithium, to minimize the impact on the environment and all the rest of it. And our team has worked extensively with a major battery manufacturer in the world, Ganfeng of China, where our head of geology worked with Ganfeng for 3 years just across the border in Argentina. So our plan would be to finalize an arrangement with the Bolivian authorities, probably a technical cooperation agreement in the first instance, because that's the most legally easy and non-problematic way to do it. And that would involve a relatively modest expenditure of our risk funds in doing basic testing and mapping in cooperation with the Bolivian State Lithium Company. And as soon as they've completed the reform of the lithium law, which they expect to be done within the next 4 months or so, then we expect to move to a joint venture whereby we would be 49% and the state lithium company would be 51%. And what we would do there is we would seek to bring one or more of the medium-sized salt lakes into production. But the big dirty secret of EVs that people don't tell you is that if you mine hard rock spodumene in West Australia, you got a reasonably good grade. You got about 4.7% lithium in the grade. And some of the mineralogy is okay, others is problematic. But what they do is they take that rock and they send it to China, where the Chinese burn the rock at 800 degrees Celsius for 2 days in coal-fired furnaces. So the actual processing of the Australian lithium is quite dirty. And so far, that hasn't really fed through the environmentalists. But when it does feed through, the pressure will come on to produce lithium by more economically and environmentally sustainable methods. And the only way to do that at scale is through the exploitation of very large salt lakes. And most of the international salt lakes are in what we call the lithium triangle, which is mainly in Bolivia, with a bit in Chile and Argentina. So we think the future is Bolivian lithium from salt lakes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for that. But just a final thought, how quickly will you know the success of the drilling?
Well, as soon as we enter into the target zone, we will know, because the rocks are well understood, both the reservoir rocks and the source rock. The only issue really is seal, top seal. So as soon as we go into the pay zone, which should be the first week or possibly second week of June, we will know from the logs if it's a discovery. Okay. And of course, we'll update the shareholders as promptly as possible.
Okay. Well, David Horgan, the chairman of Clontarf Energy, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.